Our fifth case for argument this morning is Farzana K. against the Indiana Department of Education.
Morning, Your Honor.
Go on.
Your Honors, this case originates from a special education dispute involving a soon-to-be 15-year-old who was placed by the school district in Indiana in a private residential placement. There was a dispute over that placement that led to a settlement agreement. And as an outgrowth of that settlement agreement, there was a decision by the school corporation to abrogate the settlement agreement and to request a different placement than the settlement agreement called for. It was at that point that our firm got involved. There is a lengthy history of litigation in both the federal court and state court in an effort to enforce that settlement agreement, which ultimately led to decisions by both courts that we needed to exhaust our administrative remedies. We did that on a timely basis at the Level 1 administrative hearing in Indiana.
Did you suggest to the court that it just stay proceedings while you exhausted rather than dismissing the case?
Your Honor, we did, and the court refused to do that. We did, after exhausting the first level, appeal to the second level. We lost at the second level of appeal in Indiana. We understood that we needed to file in federal court to pursue the appeal of the second-tier review, and the parties recognized that on July 6th, we filed electronically an amended complaint in response to an order that Judge Lozano had previously issued in which he had granted leave to dismiss the case without prejudice, but with leave to refile.
Now, is your argument, I didn't understand exactly, or maybe making both arguments, is it a tolling argument, or is it an argument that, yes, this filing, even though it was spat back at you because you had the wrong number on it, was good enough to be a filing? We don't usually think of tolling as available for appellate-type review, you know, 10 days, 30 days, 60 days. You're not, if you file an appeal after a year or something, you're not... You know, you may be able to get relief from the district judge, but you're not permitted to say, well, you know, I didn't file it because I was sick or I didn't understand or the defendant told me I didn't have to file for a year. I mean, we don't associate tolling with appellate-type review.
Well, Your Honor, a couple of points there. Number one, we did file it on the date it was due. We filed it and the court received it on the date that it was due, and there's electronic notice indicating that it was received on the date that it was due. But in fact, we're making both arguments, that it was an effective filing and that tolling should apply. And one of the issues that your question raises, which I think is very fair, is this in the order of an administrative review as it is normally treated, or is this in the order of an original action? And in fact, as we argue in our briefs, we believe that, in fact, when under the special education law specifically, the parties are coming into federal court for the purpose of review of an underlying administrative decision, there are statute of limitations that impact, there are exhaustion of administrative remedies that impact, but in every other respect, it is legally regarded as an original action rather than something that's governed by the state.
Cone, when you did file electronically, what was the text of the message you received back from the court?
The text message was that the case was closed.
Warning the case was closed.
Correct.
So you were never told that the filing was rejected.
Well, actually, Judge, we were contacted by the clerk the next morning to tell us that the case was rejected, and we filed a paper version of the case as it had been drafted that day, and then the next day filed a motion to file in stander a new complaint, which differed only in the respect that it didn't say amended complaint and it had a new case number. In every other respect,
but
it was the same.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, but when you filed electronically, apparently it was in the latter part of the day.
Very end of the day, Judge. The business day, I should say.
Business day, sure. You got back this notice.
That's correct.
And you attempted, I think, to travel that day to the courthouse?
We had one of the attorneys actually drive to Hammond to attempt to hand file the complaint on that date, and they weren't able to get to the court by the closing date.
Then the next day you filed the hard copy.
The next day we filed the hard copy of what was the amended complaint from the first cause, and the next day we filed a new complaint with a motion for leave to instander to file the new complaint, which the court accepted, but without the need for a motion for leave because it was a new complaint.
If you had filed in person rather than electronically the first day, what would you have expected the deputy clerk to say to you if you appeared at the counter with the old docket number on your file?
Well, I would have expected them to, as I understand the rules, Judge, the Rule 5 indicates that the clerks are not permitted to reject filings. So I would have expected the clerk to expect to accept the filing, but indicate to us that because it was a closed case, some further action would be needed.
What Rule 5E says is the clerk can't reject filings on the ground that the document is, quote, not presented in proper form. So the technical question is a bad docket number or using a docket number in a closed case a lack of proper form or not?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that it is. It was simply.
Is there any case law on the question what proper form means for purposes of Rule 5E?
We were not able to find anything that dealt with the specific. We did find cases where there was a different number. We found cases where there were a whole variety of other circumstances where there was some issue of form, lack of signature, lack of appropriate verification, lack of appropriate counts in the complaint in terms of the components of the complaint. In every case, Judge, the issues where the courts ruled against the party filing involved situations where they filed after the statute of limitations period. In every case where there was a filing on the day of or before the statute of limitations period, whatever the technical defect was, the courts ruled that the filing would be allowed.
I'm trying to ask the question, trying to get an answer to the question, whether there is any case law on the subject, whether a bad docket number is or is not lack of proper form for purposes of Rule 5E.
I'm not aware of any case, Judge.
So far as you know, there's no case law on that.
Okay, so the issue before us is we filed on the date it was due. The notice of electronic filing indicates that as the system is set up, it was electronically transmitted to the other party, so they were on notice. We immediately took steps to cure the defect by going both to the court on that day, the next day, and then filing what was a technically correct pleading 2 days later. The Supreme Court, Your Honor, Your Honors.
Was there any change that you had to make other than renumbering?
We just took out the word amended. Other than the word amended and the number, it was entirely verbatim the same complaint. And in fact, Judge Posner, I believe that you, in a prior decision that's relevant to this in the BCS Financial Corporation versus...
pertinent. Who writes the opinions of the court?
Okay, well...
Opinions speak for the court.
Opinions speak for the court, but the comment of the court is significant. The comment of the court in BCS was that when a statute of limitations establishes a deadline for filing suit in court, a technical defect in the pleading that commences the suit and by doing so arrests the running of the statute of limitations is unlikely to be fatal. In the Supreme Court cases that have looked at this, what they have focused on is the reasons behind the statute of limitations. And there have been two significant issues that they've looked at in terms of the reasons behind the statute of limitations. The first is whether the plaintiff was slumbering on their rights.
No, but see, the problem with that is it's this distinction between appellate type and original proceedings, because statute of limitations for original proceedings are normally pretty long, usually years, sometimes, you know, 90 days, but long. But whereas for appeal, sometimes it's as short as 10 days. And it would be odd, you know, if you think of the 30 days for filing a civil non-government appeal in our court, it would be odd to say to the person he'd filed 20 days late. But there was no harm to anybody, right? Nobody cared. Government or the appellee had not relied on his having missed the deadline. We don't entertain arguments like that.
Your Honor, we didn't file late.
30 days is strict unless it's filed.
The critical distinction.
You have to argue that your attempted filing with the wrong number was good enough to be a filing.
Your Honor, we certainly believe it was in every respect a correct filing.
Now, we do have cases where, you know, if the court is closed because of a snowstorm and so on, that's a generally recognized excuse, even for, you know, not filing an appeal on time. So is there anything like that? Is there some body of law about excuses for not filing appeals, say, calling this an appeal, that would include something like a mistake of sort you made?
Your Honor, all of the case law that I'm aware of focuses on the issue of whether there was a good faith effort to meet the deadline, which was achieved prior to the actual statute, or in the absence of meeting the deadline on the actual statute, then there has to be some serious exigent circumstance, such as a snowstorm or whatever. But we did file on the date it was due. The court received it on the date that it was due, and the defendants received it on the date that it's due. Your Honor, I would like to just simply indicate that with respect to the issue of the court sua sponte indicating that there was a lack of verification, because this is a federal IDEA procedure, we believe that Indiana law did not require a signed verification from the client, but simply accepted.
I don't understand what difference it would make what Indiana law requires, since you didn't file in an Indiana court.
Well, Your Honor, that's in response to the judge's conclusion that we needed verification.
Yes, I know, but I would have expected you just to have a one-liner that says, see Hanna against Plumer.
Well, Your Honor, we if we missed the one-liner, we certainly believe the argument applies, that the federal court's rules apply, and we did not need verification. We made that argument in our briefs. I see my time is up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Pat.
May it please the court, we have a couple of responses to the parent's argument. First, the parent filed the judicial review complaint 2 days late, removing jurisdiction. Second,
what does jurisdiction have to do with this? And I understand that that's what you're saying in your brief. But the Supreme Court has been very clear in recent years that case filing deadlines, even if they are mandatory, are not jurisdictional.
Right. Your Honor,
why would one refer to jurisdiction here?
Because
it's our job to flip the bird to the Supreme Court.
That's correct, Your Honor. Your Honor, the reason I'm referring to that is because under Indiana administrative law and...
But this case was not, as I just... I had this conversation with Mr. Cohen. This case was not filed in Indiana.
Okay,
Your Honor. Jurisdictional requirements for suing in federal court are a matter of federal law, not of state law.
Okay, Your Honor, and the IDEA refers to the state deadline, which is 30 days to file the action.
But whether that deadline is a jurisdictional requirement is a question of forum law.
Okay.
Right? That's so, you know, it pretty black letter these days in the Supreme Court. And if one had any doubt about it, you could just see cases like Irwin against Veterans Administration or TWA against Zipes.
Well, Your Honor, what we'd like to focus in on is that when the Board of Special Education...
Nothing turns on this, of course. It's just a question of whether it was timely or not.
That's correct. And as you pointed out, the question is under 5E. And the district court in this case specifically said...
Would it have been illegal... Suppose it had been filed in person, the complaint, and the clerk had said, no, you can't do this. I need to give you a new number. You can't file under the old number. That case was closed. I need to give you a new number, and we'll cross out amended. Would that have been illegal if he'd done that?
For the clerk to do it,
yes,
or the other side?
Yes, for the clerk to do it. Yeah, a person comes in, the complaint has said... The clerk looks it up and he says, no, you can't do this. That case is closed. I'll have to give you a new number.
Right. I believe that's a different case, Your Honor, because...
I'm asking you a question. I know it's a different case.
I believe
right?
that would
I
be acceptable,
it.
Your
I
Honor.
I know it.
I believe
right?
that would be acceptable.
Okay.
And the difference here is that and as the district court noted, and this is on page 11 of its decision, 5E does not forbid the clerk... Or the electronic
file. Yeah, but I think your answer is to my trick question was very damaging to your case. Very damaging. because if a clerk can do it, the only reason the computer can't do it hasn't been programmed to do that, right?
Your Honor, no.
Why should a difference of that sort determine the outcome of a lawsuit?
Your Honor, in this case, for example, there's a couple things that show why they wanted to file electronically. They didn't want to pay the filing fee again. They didn't want to go to Hammond, Indiana. They had a state court action that this court, the federal action, would have to abstain to the state court action. And what we see is that when they tried to file electronically, they were immediately notified that their case was closed. And that's what distinguishes this case from all the cases that they cite.
But what difference does it make to anybody?
The difference,
it's so trivial.
It is not trivial, Your Honor. For instance, the Indiana Department of Education was not a party to the prior proceeding. So when there was an electronic filing, there was no notice to the Indiana Department of Education. And I'm arguing today on behalf of both the school and the Department of Education so that we don't divide our argument here. So there was no notice to the Indiana Department of Education at all with respect to that. The electronic filing only...
Well, you say they didn't serve?
Well, they did.
They have 120 days to serve, right?
Right, but they
don't serve the day you file a complaint.
That's correct.
So it was served on the day, was it not, by the electronic system? Did you not get it on the 30th day?
The school received it, but the Indiana Department of Education did not because they were not a party to the prior proceedings.
But was it served within the 120 days?
I believe so, yes.
So, what difference does all this make?
The difference it makes is that the issue is for this court whether it's going to expand the Rule 5e cases into when a case is filed in a closed case, when a complaint is filed in a closed case, whether that qualifies or not. And there are no cases that do that.
Do you know of any authority saying that this is not a matter of form for purposes of Rule 5e?
No, Your Honor, I'm not aware of any cases that go the other way. What I am aware of is the cases that have suggested that the form issue is when, for instance, the paper is 8.5.
So you need an adjustment, don't you, for the computer age, right? Because if you file in person, these kind of little irregularities tend to be taken care of in the clerk's office. The computer doesn't do that, hasn't been programmed for that. So,
well, Your Honor, what we do know is, as I think was answered in one of the questions, is this was attempted at the late hour of the day. I believe the attempted filing was around 4 in the afternoon.
Were they trying to gain an advantage by filing late in the day?
They tried to gain an advantage by filing electronically for those reasons that I said.
Why would filing late in the day be in their interest?
Well, I'm not saying it's in their interest.
You suggest it was some kind of strategy on their part to file late in the day.
No, what I'm suggesting is that when they got the notice that the case was closed and then they attempted to drive and they said, well, the traffic was too thick to get to Hammond, that's not a sufficient excuse. You asked yourself...
Why isn't traffic an excuse? I don't understand.
Well, Your Honor, there are cases that have been cited by the parties where an attorney couldn't get to the court to file. The courthouse wasn't closed. It wasn't a snowstorm or anything like that. And the courts have said that that's not sufficient, that that's not a ground for equitable tolling or a release of the statute of limitations.
Yes, but the difference is that here they tried to file. The computer bounces it back, so then they get in their car and I don't know.
Drive madly. One would think that anything that happens as a result of the fact that a computer is not as smart as a human standing at a desk, or at least it's not as flexible as a human standing at a desk, would be a prime candidate for being treated as a matter of form for purposes of Rule 5e. What would be wrong with that general approach?
Well, Your Honor, I think that what's wrong with that approach is because it was not an attempt to file a new lawsuit. It was an attempt to file an amended complaint in this prior lawsuit that had been dismissed. So I think that the reason
and
is...
I think you should have answered Judge Posner's question the other way. You should have said that if the person showed up at the clerk's desk in Hammond and tendered this complaint and it had the wrong number on it, The only thing the clerk could say is, go away.
Well, then maybe I can amend my answer to say...
No. You can amend it, but at the expense of making yourself look very foolish.
It's hard for you to amend your answer, because if we, in the spirit of lenity...
Right, you've already filed the answer under the wrong docket number.
Exactly. If we, in the spirit of lenity, allow you to amend your answer, why shouldn't we allow them to have amended their complaint? Word amended off, right?
Your Honor, there's one other final point I'd like to point out. In this case, there's a number of documents that were presented to this court that were not presented to the district court. So in the appendix in this case, there are documents that were from the prior case. Now, if, for instance, the other side wanted the district court to take judicial notice of those documents, it should have requested that it do so. We raised this issue in our brief, that there are documents, unsworn statements of counsel. What we're dealing with here is the story that we hear of the lawyer attempting to file this. When it was very clear, the Board of Special Education gave them notice on June 1 of their appeal rights. Any party aggrieved by that decision can appeal it within 30 days of receipt, and it gave specific notice of that. So because the parents received it, they should have filed paper. And this is one final point that I'd like to point out, electronic. Judge Easterbrook asked about the difference between electronic and paper. In the Northern District of Indiana, you cannot institute an action unless you file it in paper. And this is probably another reason why they have filed electronically. And the reason is probably to address these exact issues, which is to make sure that the civil cover sheet is in form, that the paper and the complaint is in proper order. So
as I'm sure you know, many bankruptcy courts have already been on a system of e-filing only. And as of 8 days ago, district courts are authorized to have completely electronic systems, no paper.
Right.
So the kind of problem we're seeing here, where the electronic filing system may not be flexible in response to the kind of gaffes that people can make, is one that's going to come up a lot. It does seem to me we need a general rule, and not one that would depend on Hammond, as opposed to
some general
understanding of what is a matter of form.
And I think the general rule, Your Honor, I see that my time is up. May I answer your question?
Please go ahead.
I think that the general rule should be that it should comply with the district court's rules, whatever they are in those cases. And in this case, the district court rule in Hammond.
Now, actually, that's why Rule 5E was added to the national rules. And it goes hand in hand with Rule 83B, which says that errors of form, requirements of local rules about matters of form that cannot cause forfeitures of substantive rights.
Right.
So if you're saying there was something peculiar to the rules of the Northern District of Indiana, then unless, it does seem to me, Rule 83B comes into play, and it can't cause any forfeiture of substantive rights, and that's what's happened here. You have a forfeiture of substantive right.
Well, Your Honor, I see again that my time is up. My answer.
You can always answer a question.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. What I would say is that because the district court required paper filing, that had to be done in this case. And under 5E, as I say, there are no cases that suggested filing in a closed case. I mean, I'd just like to read the district court sentence. Rule 5E does not forbid the clerk or the electronic filing system to refuse to accept for filing.
And that's what the district court said. We just have to determine whether it's right.
I know.
Thank you very much, Mr. Patton. Mr. Cohen, your time has expired, so the case is taken under advisement.